Miss the morning news? No worries. Catch up with the up-to-date Summit and Wasatch County information with our weekday noon news report. Local news, weather, and information from our award-winning news team. Now more than ever, we've got your Wasatch back.
Brought to you in part by Heidi Gatch, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, HeidiGatch.com.
Support for Marketplace Morning Report on KPCW comes from Esko Heating, Air, Plumbing, and Electrical. Small undetected leaks can cause household damages. We recommend your home be inspected annually. More information at EscoUtah.com, 855-ESCO-NOW. That's ESCO, Esko.
The continued exploration of Sanson's depictions of creatures from kangaroos and fish to tortoises and birds, culminating in the most famous musical character of all, the swan. Louis Lortie performs Sanson's Piano Concerto No. 2, December 8th and 9th at Abravanel Hall. Tickets start at $21. Utah Symphony, Utah Opera, a nonprofit organization, supports KPCW.
Yeah. Crank the music up a little so that they can hear the music. And welcome to Saturday morning. We're here with the super duper film roundtable panel, and as you might tell from the introduction, yes, we have three film experts here. They may look cuddly, but don't get them wet and don't feed them after midnight. You know? So you never know what'll happen. So, okay. So we're here with. We're here with one of our steady Friday film reviewers, Libby Wadman. But it's been a long time since you were able to do a panel.
Yeah,
right?
Too long. Yeah. Too long.
Okay, so welcome, Libby.
Well, thank you. Welcome, and all the listeners.
Yeah, and not a regular film reviewer, but one of our favorites on the round table, sort of like the Arlene Francis of the round table. And that's a reference way out of date for most of us.
The only one with industry cred. The only one with industry cred.
Yeah, she's actually.
This is true.
She's actually made a film. Yeah. And finally, Mark Harrington, also a regular Friday film reviewer.
Good morning.
It just occurred to me with the disaster artist coming out and the film about we could do our Tommy Wiseau impressions. Oh, hi, Mark. So we may burst out with that occasionally, but major lots of major events in the movies coming up and all that stuff. But we've got. One of the biggest events in about a month and a half is Sundance, and they've put out the lineup of films, hundreds and dozens of pictures and everything. But looking at the program, let's start with like you said, the person with industry cred. And Jill, talk to us a little
freeze
about
frame.
Yeah, freeze frame. Yes. What scanning the program? What looks interesting?
Oh, you know what's so interesting to me personally is the post Harvey Weinstein, bring on the strong complex women, films, panels, discussions. Just whole ambiance. We've all been kind of avoiding that person for many years, me as a photographer with the festival, but just really excited to see, some just really turning the page of that chapter into a new chapter And I'm also really excited. Well, actually, I should mention a couple of the women films that I'm really kind of excited about. Not only dramas and narratives and documentaries, but hybrids of the both, both genres. Films about a film about Joan Jett called Bad Reputation looks fantastic. Ruth Bader Ginsburg called RBG. Gloria Allred called Seeing Allred. And the Jane Fonda in Five Acts really looks exciting to me. But I also wanted to mention the films from Utah. So exciting. Quiet Heroes by Utah filmmaker Jenny McKenzie. It focuses on the one hospital in Utah that took patients during the AIDS crisis. That's in the documentary premiere section. And also in the, I'm not sure what section it's in.
Oh, the one
but
with
the film Believer.
Imagine Dragons.
Yeah, the Imagine Dragons lead singer.
I think it's documentary premieres.
Okay, it's a premiere. Yeah, the personal crusade to make the church more
Believer.
Accepting of homosexuality. And the Zellner brothers, they've had films at the Sundance for many years. And I just love their, I don't know what it's called. Does anybody know the Zellner brothers? Their new film, it's also in premieres, but they did a lot of the cinematography in Utah. So it's always great to see a connection with Sundance in Utah.
Yeah, there will probably be some discussion of the harassment issue. And and the Women's March at the last festival, I think Harvey was a proud participant in that event.
Oh, isn't that amazing?
Donning
his pink hat.
How quickly things change.
Yes. On a dime.
Lots of discussion about it. Maybe that whole theme didn't show up so much in the dramas and documentaries. Maybe next year. We'll see.
Well, actually, there is one, Half the Picture, in the documentary premieres that focuses specifically on Hollywood and women directors and what they've put up with all these years, which I was a little surprised to see it because it seemed to me, wow, how long ago was Harvey? be making this year's festival because I was expecting more of that. Perhaps next year.
Yeah, well, you know,
I think you'll see a lot. I'll see more of it next year, I think.
You know, I actually think that a lot of women are just tired of talking about the issue, and it's time to just bring on the content, bring on the films by film women for women,
Triple F rating.
And just show what women are capable of doing. So that's really what I'm excited about. And I think a lot of the panels will be in the art installations at New Frontier and will just really be, just good content by and for women.
Yeah, amongst the avalanche of Harvey stories, two reputed incidents occurred at the Sundance Film Festival. The one with Rose McGowan in the late 90s, which apparently was settled, so maybe we'll have to ask Mark on his legal side if you can do anything further with it. If you've settled with the guy.
I'd prefer not to comment at all on that end of it. But no, I think it's Sundance always has this weird history that they just do such a good job of aligning whatever the issue of the day is that's so politically relevant with what's coming down through their pipeline and independent voices. And so I think the community really stands to benefit from that, again, with this platform. I'm not going to add to what's already been said, but I think everything Jill said, I agree with.
We'll ask the Park City Attorney a legal opinion about whether Harvey's past victims could file suit in Summit County.
We've never loved attorneys more than now. Rick, while we're on the subject of Sundance, I was wondering if, like listeners, if we could talk just quickly about, just how to get tickets and passes and all that thing. You know, like, I think... for so many years.
Yeah. Well, whoever knows.
Yeah.
as they said in Shakespeare in Love, it's a mystery.
Yeah. Really.
And I think it's a mystery to Sundance, which is the really bad thing.
Well, I just wanted to take out some of the mystery of it, and want to just urge locals to not worry about having to get a package or individual tickets ahead of time, but to take advantage of the e-wait list. You can do that during the festival. Wait till there's buzz on a particular subject and film that you're interested in. And then from the comfort of your own home, you can go, you just get the Sundance app and you sign, you 2 hours before a screening, you push that button, submit, and you can get on the e-wait list. It's a great way to go.
Yeah, and I just add to that, I think there's lots of opportunities. And, you know, like anything that has grown to be successful, they're a victim of their success. So, yes, it is more complicated. And yes, the online system has become, you know, fraught with variety because of the dangers, because of the variety of options. I think it's been hard for them to serve all people on that system, clearly. But I think this year went smoother than last year and continues to. So hopefully that will be the way it goes for the rest of the ticketing. But I think locals should always look to take advantage of the local film opportunities and the pickups on Saturday and the Tuesday that happens right before the festival for the showings after the festival for the award winners, and then the Townie Tuesday as well. Those are great opportunities if you don't deal with the ticket package. And otherwise, just keep your ear to the ground. There's always opportunities in the front. Mm-hmm. And if you weren't lucky enough to get a package or... And then, of course, the Locals Day advanced ticket sale is always the best way to go because you're directly limited to Utah locals. But, you know, Sundance is somewhere in the middle on that, you know, where it's more accessible than Telluride. It's less accessible than, you know, major metropolitan film festivals. So
the other thing you can do.
You got to be committed to be all in. It is, you know, to go through it. But that's right. It goes without saying. But there's plenty of opportunities just... You know, strategize and focus.
Yeah. It's also fun to come up to Main Street and just absorb Sundance. And if you get up early, go to the ticket office and check out what tickets are available.
Right. The day of is a great opportunity.
It's a great way. I've seen a number of them that way.
And the only final thing I'd mention is the new kids programs. Those are really fun.
Oh, there's some
and they're
great
still
ones
underknown.
Out there.
And, you know, grab your kid and go to one, particularly if they're a young adult. Because some of them are a little more advanced topically than just the cartoons. But those are a great opportunity for a local outing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me ask you, anybody have a take on, I think they made a change this year so that the voting and the awards would not just go to the films and the drama and documentary competition. I think they kind of opened it up so that just sort of everything would. And,
no, but I have a question. One's already won the Alfred P. Sloan Award for 2018. I'm like, how does that work?
Which one? Yeah, they Alfred Sloan is sort of I think picked by a jury or by an audience vote. It's kind of some other exotic body that.
But
decides.
I thought it always happened here at Sundance.
No, they made that change. I think a couple years ago. I think
okay.
I think it trained, and I could be completely wrong. I'm not prepared for this topic, so I'll go off the top of my head like I always do.
Sure.
But my understanding is that's now more attached to a grant and a so that has been announced in advance, and then they have. An
That's
award right. ceremony while it's here, and that replaced a different award that used to be announced during the festival, and so now it's more tied to a grant.
So it is given to a film that discusses science or has a scientist as a character, or someone sings the song "She Blinded Me with Science," or somehow. Yeah.
Well, this is a girl who is involved in a mystery that takes place totally on computer screens.
Mm. Oh.
So, and it's called Search, and that's the one that has won the award this year.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the in terms of opening up the voting for award winners, I think that is probably a nice move and long overdue. In that, some of the films that have come out of the festival. And have made the biggest sensation have not been in the dramatic or documentary competitions. What do you do when the big sensation at a Sundance is something in the midnight section? Like many, many, many years ago, we had Blair Witch.
Exactly.
And maybe we'll talk about this later, but one of the big films out of last year's festival was Get Out, which maybe we'll, when we discuss Oscar contenders later, we can get into that a little bit more. But before we have to take a break, Jill, any other titles that kind of jump out at you?
Well, you know, I am actually just interested in that opening up of the awards, like maybe in the next section. The next section is just really more of a hybrid films and really innovative films that aren't necessarily kind of those conventional ones that you see. And the film from last year, Tangerine by Sean Baker, he shot it all on an iPhone. He also did The Florida Project this year, so he's a great director. Upcoming director. But as far as other titles and Sundance, wow, you know, I'm just, I don't know. I'm excited about Sundance.
The Florida, is that a next? The Florida Project?
Well, no, The Florida Project is actually the Willem Dafoe film. That's actually the Park City Film Series coming up on their calendar. But that is by Sean Baker, who was a Sundance filmmaker.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. There's also I would have thought there would have been a lot of films and things dealing with Donald Trump, but I guess
there's
the,
one.
There's one or two.
Who?
One is let's see.
Yeah. Who?
Who? Yeah.
Well, while you look, I always pick two films I think no one else will talk about. So, as you search for your title before we transition to the next topic, I always advocate for the shorts program. You can always find something, at least one film in the slate. And shorts program one is really strong this year, and they've added that again, I believe, to the opening night sequence of films. So that usually is an indication of the strength of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And the unique film World of Tomorrow, Episode 2, follow-up to Don Hertzfeldt's incredibly successful short about a little girl who has to interact with her own clone in her memories. Fantastic premise and just a really interesting slate. And then I love heist movies. So in Dramatic, you have American Animals, a lab project from Sundance, mostly true story. Just about four men who mistake their lives for a movie and attempt a big heist. It's just a great premise, so I'm really excited to see that film.
Okay, well, we'll get back to the discussion. Just a few more Sundance reflections, because we haven't quite heard from Libby yet. And we'll be back with the Film Roundtable.
Hi, this is Bob Dillon, a lawyer in the Park City office of Jones Waldo with 38 years of legal experience in complex real estate transactions. Proud supporters of KPCW, Jones Waldo provides local businesses with legal services in areas ranging from real estate to employment law. Our website is joneswaldo.com.
Mountain Money on KPCW is sponsored in part by Columbus Pacific Properties, presenting Viridian, 21 new residences along the 11th fairway of the Canyons Golf Course with year-round amenities and gondola access. Summers on the fairway, winters on the slopes. More information at ViridianParkCity.com.
Hi, this is Deb Kupel of Sweetgrass Counseling Services, happy to support KPCW. We are here to help strengthen relationships and empower everyday challenges, whether the issues are emotional, health, or sport-related. We offer individual couples and family sessions for all ages. More information at sweetgrasscounseling.com.
Okay, we're back to the round table, and before we leave the theme of Sundance, we didn't have a chance to hear from Libby. So, but what Oh, hi, Libby.
Hi there.
I'm trying to do my Mark Weisso impression throughout the program here, in honor of the disaster artist. What in the program kind of jumps out at you?
Well, I was just sitting here looking at the U.S. Dramatic Competition category, and if I counted correctly, I think there are 32 films in it. 8 of those are directed by women. So in my mind, that's a lot more, perhaps, than what we've had in past years. So that's kind of nice. We were talking about Trump, and there's one film that just leapt off the page at me. It's in the World Cinema Documentary Competition. It's called Our New President. And it's Trump's election told entirely through Russian propaganda. And I just thought, given all the things going on today, that could be a very interesting one to see. I've noticed that there isn't just one particular theme, which we've had in the past with Sundance, that every film seems to always be teenage angst or something like that. There are some themes that keep popping up, but there seem to be a mix of them. We still have the oppressive families and the angst that goes with all of that. There are some coming-of-age films. And then, as Jill was talking about, there are a lot of films that have to do with music and the musicians that create that music, a lot more than what I remember seeing in the past. I've never been taken with New Frontier, and I have to say, I think I'm going to be spending a lot of time at New Frontier this year. Some of the things that you can interact with just sound phenomenal. I'm just wondering if I'm going to go home with a major migraine or something after doing it. So that's my take on Sundance. I'm excited to see it.
Okay, New Frontier is always a great program to follow, and it's one of the places you can usually get a ticket at.
Yeah. Oh, don't give it away.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, don't give away any insider tips to the hoi polloi. But the a couple of films that touch on Trumpism. I think that besides the the documentary Our New President on Russian media, I think they've also the next section. I think they have A Boy, A Girl, and a Dream, which is about three people, dramatic film, about three people on the night of the presidential election. So that'll be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And then sort of related to that indirectly is kind of Seen Allred, which is the documentary on Gloria Allred.
Yeah.
And that'll be interesting to see if she shows up for that premiere.
I'm kind of hoping, having lived in L.A. for an awfully long time, mm-hmm. I mean, Gloria Allred was always there on the news, so I'm kind of psyched about
and to see
seeing the film. And
if she shows up and all the questions are about, show us the damn yearbook. What's the deal with this?
Yeah.
There are a couple of films that, not major themes, but kind of twofers. There's one about a girl in the 90s who's sent away to gay conversion therapy camp, and it's called Miseducation of Cameron Post, I think. And then later on in another program, there's one about I Am Not a Witch, which is about a girl sent to witch camp. So a few common themes that come along here. And just briefly, maybe the one that I'm intrigued to see most of all is the documentary premier dramas called Futile and Stupid Gesture, which is not a documentary about, but a docudrama about mm-hmm. Doug Kenny, the guy who the co-creative force behind National Lampoon, played the small but noticeable role in Lampoon's Animal House. He was the guy Stork, who led the marching band into the blind alley. and the you know, creative and troubled guy, and played by Will Forte in this movie. So that'll be fun to see who's in there playing playing Chevy Chase and Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi and the Lampoon writers and Michael O'Donoghue and so that'll be interesting.
Very.
There are also some movies dealing with other current topics, police shootings. Well, things
oh,
like
yeah.
that. There are several of
many.
Those
yes.
in here. I hope people will go and see those.
Mm. Okay. Well, the Mark, any final notes on Sundance? Okay. He was shaking. He was shaking his head. Mm-mm, yeah.
Move on.
Well, looking at some of the films of the fall, and we're sort of taking a look at those and seeing what might be what you liked and what might be Oscar bait, which are often two different categories.
Yes.
The films that you really, you know, enjoyed, you know, don't have a prayer of getting an Oscar nomination, but anything comes to mind, Libby, that you're pulling for to get some respect.
The two that I've seen recently, and one of them is total guilty pleasure because I was an Agatha Christie fan as a kid, still am. But I thought Kenneth Branagh technically did a beautiful job with Murder on the Orient Express. Mm-hmm. The artistry in it, the detail he went to recreating an exact replica of the train, four cars and the engine, a mile long track. How he kept the video going so that if you were looking out the windows, you were seeing actual scenery and it didn't keep repeating itself as it does so often in movies. The shooting through beveled glass. It was just, artistically, it was a really beautiful movie. Acting, ho-hum, but I don't think acting is such an important thing with Agatha Christie.
I think our former panel mate Destiny had the best quote for that. She said, "Everyone was out-acted by his mustache."
which I was so upset. They totally blew the fixing of the mustache every night. They had it once, and then later on, he never had the little gizmo on. So yeah, it was the mustache was more of a klutzy maneuver in that film, I think. But the other one I saw that I just love, I wouldn't mind going to see it again, is Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, with Frances McDormand and Woody Harrelson. Just fabulous. It's the his name is escaping me right now, but it's the same writer-director who did In Bruges.
Is it Martin McDonagh?
Yeah. Okay. And the things he does in that film, I mean, I want to see it again because there are just so many different layers to it. You know, just how Frances McDormand is dressed in the same thing day after day. And it's one of those things that it's serious, but you can't take it too seriously. I mean, he specializes in sarcasm. And so if you're not into sarcasm, you might not like the film. But I think she did a fabulous
job. Yeah. Now, is it more than just, you know, there's a story about this, you know, tremendously angry, you know, grieving mom.
What really intrigued me was how what happens to one character has a direct impact on another character, which has a direct impact on another character. Not so much in what happens to them, but what they learn and how they internalize that and make changes within themselves. In their outlook, in how they deal with people. I just thought it was so marvelous. The screenplay was so marvelously crafted to interweave this element of learning while you're laughing and horrified at the same time watching what's happening on the screen. But it really has a very kind of hopeful lesson to it that you can work on yourself to be a better person. Kind of thing.
Yeah. And I'm hearing a lot of Oscar buzz for Sam Rockwell, who plays the dim deputy.
Yes, he was quite good. Yeah, I would have to give him some kudos there.
Yeah. Jill, what have you seen that looks like an Oscar prospect, or what are you hoping?
I'm a big fan of Lady Bird.
Haven't seen that.
Yeah, the Greta Gerwig, who was actress, you know, Sundance actress for many years and still, but she directed and wrote the screenplay for it. And it's one of those films that's kind of quiet on the outside, but very stirring and profound on the inside. You know, that's kind of a woman's, journey, as opposed to the masculine hero's journey, slaying the dragon. It's more like slaying the dragon inside. It's just about, our modern times, and it was just told with such subtlety and nuance. I just love it. I really hope it does well. I'm really excited about, there's so many great performances. Victoria and Abdul, the film that stars Judi Dench. I just saw that at the Park City Film Series last night. It's playing this weekend.
I was disappointed in that one.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
I can watch Judi Dench all day. She goes through a huge transformation in my mind. Faces Places is a documentary film by an 89-year-old Agnes Varga, who she goes on a kind of this journey with this installation artist, and they... it's just so fresh and interesting, and it's on the short list for documentaries for Oscars. So
meaning not quite nominated, but the kind of the preliminary list or
something?
Yeah,
exactly, right. Also, I'm really excited about Paul Thomas Anderson's film Phantom Thread. That's the one with Daniel Day-Lewis, and, the big buzz is about how it's his last acting he's not going to act anymore, but I think he does that after every single film he's in. And I think it's more about the articles and reporters out there, that's the story. But I am really interested.
And it's the director that he won an Oscar with on There Will Be Blood, right?
There Will Be Blood with Daniel Day-Lewis, exactly. Yeah. What was The Master and Punch... Drunk Love, what else?
Yeah, and Daniel Day, and if you want to get an idea of the range of Daniel Day-Lewis, I mean, look at the three films that he won Oscars for, where he was the poet, Christy Brown, way back in the late 80s, so what the heck was that, the name of it?
I just remember My Left Foot and...
Yeah, that's the one.
Oh, that's the one, okay,
yes.
Yeah.
And then There Will Be Blood, and then his third Oscar was Lincoln. Look at those three characters and see if you can believe the same actor is
all
of them.
Exactly. Yeah. And, of course, Last of the Mohicans is one of his.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, one of my favorites.
Yes.
Another film that's kind of on my radar right now is the film Stronger. It's about the man who was paralyzed. He was hit by a bomb at the Boston Marathon. And then Jake Gyllenhaal, he keeps getting stronger and stronger in his performances.
And in terms of Oscar bait, Mark, I know that there's a lot of attention for the two British World War II epics. One is Dunkirk, and I know you reviewed that. And what are the Oscar prospects for that?
Yeah, no, I think they're fading. But I, I think visually, I think it'll probably capture a couple, either cinematography, sound, or special effects, just outstanding. A film you really want to see on the big screen if you have the opportunity, just the way because it interweaves the three plot scenarios or structures, I should say, more accurately, land, air, water. With the soundtrack and the plot developments in a very unique way. So for a nerdy film person, great film to see. The other nerdy film, of course, is Blade Runner. I think 2049 will fit in the same category. Some structure problems in the narrative, perhaps, but just really knocked it out of the park in terms of paying tribute and building off the original, I thought. And cinematographer Roger Deakins, I'll be shocked if he's not nominated and win
perhaps on cinematography. It's just a fantastic display of innovation there, and love the film.
Okay, and I think Libby.
Yeah, I'd just like to throw out, because I think this woman deserves the Oscar for Best Actress, as much as I like Frances McDormand's performance. Sally Hawkins in Maude. She was absolutely fabulous. That movie didn't get, didn't get a whole lot of press. It just sort of came and went. It's about the primitive artist Maude Lewis, who was Canadian, and suffered greatly physically and emotionally. And Sally Hawkins just grabbed you from the very beginning and pulled you all the way through that film. And Ethan Hawke was quite good too. And he's at Sundance a lot this year.
Where can you see Maude right now?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It came and went very quickly in the theaters, but it's just an incredible movie about this woman, and she is spectacular.
Mm. And just quickly, could she benefit from a Ricochet effect? Because for that film, there's not much talk. She's also in The Shape of Water, which is getting talked about a lot, and maybe they'll give her an Oscar for in effect two films, but she'll get it for The Shape of Water, which is an Oscar phenomenon.
Yeah.
But we will get back to our discussion. Next segment, we'll try to plunge into some Christmas memories of our panel. But we'll be right back.
Earl Foote here, CEO and Chief Technology Consultant with Nexus IT, still supporting the station and staff of KPCW. Technology can be slow, old, or frustrating. Nexus IT provides service, sales, and maintenance for your personal and business computer needs. 435-487-9099 or nexusitc.net.
For adventurers on a budget, the Utah Olympic Park offers a host of activities at no charge. Admission and parking are always free. Start with a tour of the Alf Engen Ski Museum and the Eccles 2002 Winter Games Museum. Best of all, come support athletes from all over the world who train at the park. Open daily from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Details available at UtahOlympicLegacy.org.
Utah Olympic Park is a nonprofit organization dedicated to providing winter sport and recreation opportunities, and a KPCW supporter.
Hi, I'm Heidi Gatch with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. KPCW is our community campfire and our real-time bulletin board. I'm proud to sponsor the new news. Stay connected to all things Park City by listening to KPCW. My connection information is 640-0892 or HeidiGatch.com.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say.
I remember watching those as a kid. They were relatively new when I was a kid, if not new. And I couldn't understand why they weren't going to be showing them again until
the next Christmas.
I mean, it was year, one time.
Yeah, and it's like, what do you mean? I want to see it again. And yeah, so my kids had the videos. I made sure they had the videos.
Right.
Yeah, well, why they haven't been put out in some massive DVD set. I don't.
Rankin Bass, please help us out.
Yeah, send us. Yeah, I wasn't intimately familiar with those, but I guess the whole generation of people, the name Yukon Cornelius.
Yes.
No.
Silver and gold.
Yes. There are sites about Yukon Cornelius. I was just seeing some blogger comments. I was like, F with Yukon Cornelius and you die. he's a tough guy or
That's
something.
Great.
What a great name.
Yes. Let's continue venturing into our childhoods here. I mean, I mean, Jill was what was the a movie, TV show, but the best Christmas memory from one of those media efforts.
Yeah, nothing quite. I just love that feeling sitting in the living room with the family and the Charlie Brown Christmas came on once a year, one time, and we all sat and watched it. And, Linus reading, lo and behold, I'm not sure, but it was just great. And, I love the White Christmas. Any song that comes on with Bing Crosby or Rosemary Clooney, especially the song Snow. Snow, snow, snow.
Yes, I played that with Randy Barton for the first big dump of the year.
Oh,
we
perfect.
Get that into the.
Yeah, we really need that. That should be our mantra this winter.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, we should play it every day. It's a little superstitious to get some of it going.
Oh, and I can't tell you how many times I've seen It's a Wonderful Life. I mean, it never gets old. And it's actually playing at the Park City Film Series on the winter solstice, December 21st, on the big screen.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen it so many times that I'm like seeing new things now. Like there's this kind of visual motif with Potter, the villain, played by
Lionel Barrymore.
Lionel Barrymore, yeah. So there's always a cross and bones in the scene.
I have to watch it again.
Yeah, and which is even more interesting, in the building and loan office with Jimmy Stewart and all the people in his family, there's always some kind of wildlife, like a raven or a squirrel or a rabbit. And if we watch it on the big screen at the Library Center together on the 21st, it's always so nice to watch something
with
like families. That together with family. We can just see those little nuances.
And of course the Capra films are filled with just so many wonderful actors. Just one little trivia note is that if you remember where Jimmy Stewart reluctantly goes to the high school dance and he's entranced with Mary, and he takes Mary away from her dorky date. And the date in revenge opens up the gym floor, which they've just installed with the swimming pool. And the guy playing the dorky date is Carl Alfalfa Switzer.
Alfalfa of
the Little Rascals.
Right. That's right.
In his awkward teenhood, getting a few small parts. But he's the one who put George Bailey into the drink. Mark, any memory, anything from Elf to Rankin Bass, what kind of sticks out for you?
Well, you guys were singing, it brought my memory back to some of my favorite song scenes in Christmas films, because they're not necessarily Christmas films. I went to some older ones. So for me, Love Actually, the Bill Nye scenes where he's, no analogy with current political events, but here you have this buffoon who's aware that his the quote is something like festering turd of a record that he's self-covered to turn into that what becomes growing because of social media, the record of the year as a cover of a Christmas song. And so every scene where he's in that film, which otherwise is a little sappy, but is just so edgy, and he does such a great job. Mm-hmm. And then because I'm New England and a Red Sox fan, of course, Beautiful Girls, when the Timothy Hutton's character at this little pub around Christmas time, you know, serenades Uma Thurman's character with his buddies that are all, you know, like doing shots as snow falls outside with Sweet Caroline on the piano. A very nostalgic moment there, although I can pretty much say with confidence that Uma Thurman was never in my hometown.
Nice. Okay, and I'll mention my favorite little moment from a Christmas movie, which is the version of Scrooge done the British version done in 1951 with hardly, you know, a bunch of British actors that hardly anybody knows. Although if you rewatch that film and the flashbacks to Scrooge's early life, the young Marley is played by a guy named Patrick McNee. 15 years before, you know, fame and the adventures. But the great moment from that is toward the end when Scrooge is redeemed and he shows up to his nephew's house to try to reconcile with the nephew who's been scorning all through the whole picture. And and as he gets to the Christmas party, the partygoers are singing Barbara Allen, which is the theme associated with Scrooge's sister, who died and in childbirth, leaving Scrooge forever bitter about his nephew. And he's come to the nephew's house to reconcile, and he's allowed in by this little bit player, just a little shy little maid, and he's trying to walk up to the door and summon the courage, and looks back, and the maid who says not a word, but she gives him a little encouraging nod.
Yeah.
To tell this little small creature, you know, to the great and rich Scrooge, in that little nod, he finds the strength to open the door and go in and greet his nephew, and that for me is just the wonderful little bit.
That makes me want to go see that version.
Yeah. If it's get the DVD of the Alistair Sim as a wonderful my favorite version of Scrooge, just go for it. And
and then after you stop crying, you can go rent Bill Murray's version and laugh when he gets punched in the face. There's some pretty good scenes.
Yeah, but the Scrooge.
Do some cross comparison.
Has anybody seen the Patrick Stewart version of it?
I saw it a number of years ago, but Bill Murray is. I think that was kind of flawed. It was sort of. I think they meant to. They did it better when they put him in Groundhog Day. But Groundhog Day is what they were kind of trying to do with Scrooge. Mm-hmm. But the opening of Bill Murray as the tacky Christmas special, which is and Santa and the elves fighting off terrorists or something. It was Scrooge called the night the reindeer died.
Film within the film.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
And Lee Majors pops in to save the day. But I don't. Do we have? Can we just go to the top of the hour before we have to break?
Is that? Oh, we've got 6 minutes.
Okay. So we have to cover one vastly important topic. It's the most important topic of the whole thing, which is, why is Jill pissed off at Rotten Tomatoes? she did mention this previously to the panel. So
steam coming out of her ears.
Yes.
Well, it's more of a love-hate relationship.
A love-hate, okay.
Hey, I use Rotten Tomatoes, too. I just can't believe that we go or don't go to a movie because we see a nice fresh red tomato with a percentage next to it, or don't go because there's this green splatter of a tomato. Why has that become the gauge of why we do or don't go to movies? It just doesn't seem
choices.
Right.
I know for me,
sometimes there's so many movies I want to see and I need guidance because I can only see one, maybe two. Mm-hmm. So I look at IMDb, I look at Rotten Tomatoes or a couple others out there, and whichever movie gets the most cred, that's the one I go to.
Yeah, and for me, it's no surprise at all, and I'm a fan. But like everything, it's you got to use it for its purpose. Mm-hmm. And to be technical, the site has two measurement systems. One's the tomato meter on the left, which measures critical. It's an aggregate of critical scores, and then the right side is audience. That's the populace version. So I find it very fun for that quick hit that, hey, if I know there's a disconnect between those two, A, is it genre-oriented? Because, either like black comedy or horror films or sci-fi is where you often see, or comedy, you can see audience at like 98 and the critics way low. And as long as you understand that that's a genre difference and you're in that genre and you love that genre, you can make an educated decision. And then otherwise, when you have both of them above 91, you're in a safe bet. It's going to be somewhere. And I think it's used, like everything else, it represents the best and worst of modern society. That's more information than we could get through plowing through stuff. On the flip side, most people don't want critical analysis anymore. They don't want to read in depth. There's very few people that, hey, earlier this week, they heard the announcement for this show, and they went to their wife and say, gee, I'm going to spend some Q2 time and alter my film trajectory in terms of strategy for movie seeing for the rest of the year by listening to Harrington on the radio. I'm pretty sure nobody said that to their wife on Tuesday, right? So this gives that person 30 seconds information that's highly aggregated, and we could spend a whole session on how it's been manipulated, but it gives you a quick look at something to make a decision. And so for that, it's useful. But like anything else, if you got to look at some awareness of the differences. And I think the genre difference and knowing that is very where those distinctions occur between loyal populace that are reflected in the audience. And that's why, movie is our most accessible art in my view. And you have that great division between something that and you see that in the, probably most evident in the all the superhero movies, right? Super packed, absolutely packed, and getting even Justice League, lots of packed theaters, and critics would be like tank.
Yeah, so the superhero stuff, the audiences, it might get a strong audience rating, and not so much critics.
And anything with a strong star that has a big loyalty and as well, or some nostalgia. And you just got to know what the variables are. And most people, I think, actually pay more attention to the right column than the critics column.
Hmm. Yeah.
And Jill, I mean, do you think Rotten Tomatoes has too much power, that people are following it?
Well, see, that's what I think. It has too much power. There's an article on Martin Scorsese just really criticizing it. But I'm looking at the Flixster app right now, showing where films are played, and the Rotten Tomatoes it figures prominently there. And Murder on Orient Express, which you brought up earlier, Libby, such an incredible film. And, I'm looking at the green splat right now with a 58%. It's just like, I can't believe that. On the other side, I'm looking at Lady Bird.
That's because there's critics we're film reviewers. That was the other point I was going to make if we had another 10 minutes. We're film reviewers, not critics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's big difference there. But I would be in that other category because Kenneth Branagh should be doing nothing but transitions from theater to work to big screen. And if New York and Broadway had half a brain, they'd hire him to translate, shows to film exclusively, or HBO, and do that. He ever since he left Emma Thompson, he has not made a good dramatic transition in a film since a Shakespeare film. Mm-hmm. That's just my own prejudice. That movie was deeply, deeply boring. I couldn't wait to get out of that theater. And I had a whole dinner party. We were going to have a Murder on the Orient Express dinner party. And we were so depressed to ever get out of that movie, everybody went home.
So you'd give it less than 58%.
I would, but I agree with the technical components of that film, but you're all distorted by the love of the Agatha Christie book and the original film, which you loved. And so you wanted this film to be good.
Just like
Wonder Woman.
But my review was aimed at the technical aspects. Yeah. But I will say Maudie, the one I think Sally Hawkins should win the Oscar for, the tomato meter is 88% and the audience score is 90%. So go see Maudie.
Well, I love that Lady Bird got 100% and it's breaking records on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, in both categories, right? I think that's what I heard.
We should save that as a hot topic for a future panel. Does Kenneth Branagh have a problem post Emma? With that Emma,
I love it.
Yeah, and
we have to pick topics in which there's a debate.
energy just rose. We
got to find some topics where people really strongly disagree with.
Well, we had such a great time. Thanks for having us, Rick.
Well, it's about time to fade out our round table. Check in with us, the Saturday after the film festival ends, and we'll have a postmortem on Sundance. who we got, we don't quite know yet, but we'd like to thank. We'd like to thank Libby Wadman, and hopefully we'll see Libby a lot more.
I hope so.
And Jill, we'll see how Maudie does at the Oscars.
Exactly.
Jill Orschel, and Mark Harrington. Oh, hi, Mark. we'll see if we can get Tommy Wiseau to ever show up for a panel. But thank you for our film roundtable. We'll see you after Sundance.
Great. See you then. That was good.